It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here, but barely, because they're running out the door to get their iPad mini with Retina display, Apple's secret release. Up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 376, recorded November 12th, 2013. Now with more angstroms. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak11. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple needs. And ladies and gentlemen, our Apple guys are here. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times with his cows and his shuttle. Cows at the Space Shuttle, the name of this show.
Exactly. That's what's going to be painted on the side of my new custom Chevy van that I'm having commissioned. Some of them will have Pegasus wings, and there will be sort of a Tinkerbell sort of effect, but we can't use the actual Tinkerbell. But it's going to be quite impressive. I think that when we go to the rally in 4 months from now, it's going to be the belle of the ball.
I'm sure. How about you, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com?
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm good.
I'm tired. I waited up all night to see if those stupid pre-orders would go live, and then I waited up to see if I could get one.
Did you get a mini?
I ended up ordering two because the one I wanted is only shipping in 5 to 10 days, and that means it'll get here, I don't know, to Christmas. So then I ordered one of the ones that was instantly available, and now, like an idiot, I'm refreshing the personal pickup options on the webpage.
Go right now to store.apple.com, kids, and get your mini while you can. What a surprise that they slipstream that. I found out myself last night when I got an email from a guy at Best Buy who said, I am holding in my hands an iPad mini with Retina. Because apparently they started arriving at the Best Buys and they were allowed to sell them immediately. So if you find the right store. Now, I of course, immediately ordered an iPad Air. Thank you, Apple, for letting me cancel. and then figured out my error and ordered an iPad Mini. 1 to 3 days. You couldn't get it engraved if you wanted 5 to 10 days. You couldn't get anything more than 32 gigs if you wanted
Wi-Fi. 16 and 32 Wi-Fi were 1 to 3 days.
That's what I got.
All the rest were 5 to 10.
I got a 32 Wi-Fi. Hoping.
No, if Apple were a different sort of company, they would probably realize that, look, we got way too many. We don't know how we're possibly going to sell MacBook Retinas with only 16 gigabytes of storage. I know. We will just basically have people wait 2 months for delivery on the 256 gig models. They will buy the model they don't want if that's the only one they can get in the next 2 or 3 days because it's the new thing.
Well, this is the other question mark. Nowhere in my area had pickup at the Apple stores. Has anybody reported that you can get Apple store pickup?
It's supposed to go live some point today, maybe tonight, maybe around 8 p.m., and then you'll be able to pick them up tomorrow. At least that's what most places. Some people are selling them. Some stores are selling them. Best Buy's,
whatever they've got. It might be a handful, but whatever they've got, yeah.
And no one seems to know what they'll get in stock tomorrow. So when you go at 8 p.m. or whatever
it is,
you'll be able to see what's available. Yeah.
Anybody here in the studio audience, iPad mini with Retina, anybody? No. I thought that's why you were up early. No, okay. Rats. Anybody wants to come over to the Brick House Studios, bring your mini with Retina display. Isn't that amazing? Now, I am under the assumption that they're going to be in short supply, but maybe not.
No, they are.
I mean, they're going to, yeah. they're definitely going to be short packed. If you really, really, really want to have one for the holidays, you're going to have to take pretty much whatever you're going to get because I don't hear anything encouraging about the availability of iPad minis.
Yeah.
I still have enough for a retail launch, which is kind of telling.
Right. I have is order being processed, available to ship 1 to 3 business days, but then delivers November 20th to 22nd.
Yeah.
So something hinky's going on.
I fell for this with the Air. I did second day shipping, and it still came the same amount of time, no matter what.
It's an estimate, Leo. It's not a guarantee.
Do you think they're actually in the country yet? They're probably
some stores have them. Yeah,
some stores have them. Yeah. Weird.
My iPad Mini smart cover has already shipped. I love it when you order those things and you get the mail. It's shipped and you open it up and it's always just the cover or the case.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my red cover is on its way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just what I need.
Lickety split.
Lickety split by the Postal Service delivers any minute. Actually, that says November available ship within 24 hours delivers November 19th. Do those delivery estimates, they're intentionally long?
Yeah, I mean, especially when they're going cross-border, because you never know what's going to happen. Customs.
And everything is coming from China, probably, at this point.
Yeah, I'll even be curious to see if the first ones to be delivered have the same sort of, like, slightly yellowing sort of problem that a lot of early devices have.
The glue still wet.
Exactly. I bet that a lot of adhesives are still curing on this thing. And if this were the iPad, Mini C with plastic colors, it would be, you'd see a little bit of red, like, rubbing off on the inside of the box, maybe even dripping off of the corner of the package.
Crazy thing is reviewers. I mean, Jim Dalrymple already posted his review. Reviewers were only getting them today. So this is not a normal product release by any stretch of the imagination.
He posted his review even though he just got it?
It's not a huge difference. It's a Retina display, and Jim he's used it at the Apple campus, and then he used it when he was here and he wrote up his thoughts. Jim doesn't do, a Nantex style reviews. He does very experiential reviews. So his is all about, you no longer have the compromise of the Retina display when you're using an iPad Mini. But I think it's telling that, you know, Apple was only giving these to the media reviewers today, and you know, they're already shipping them.
So his review at loopinsight.com. He's a mini guy like me. Us big guys like small devices, it seems.
Seeing Jim with an 11-inch MacBook Air is always going to – that's my biggest memory of him, is at WWDC with an 11-inch MacBook Air.
He, like me, said the fact that last year's mini didn't have a Retina display was a sacrifice I was willing to make for the size. But even when I landed in New York last night, I reached for the mini, even though I had the iPad Air in my bag. So, and I'm kind of feeling that too, now that I've seen and played with the Air, that I still want the mini, especially since it's a no compromise device this year.
The screen size is still a compromise, but yeah, in terms of tech specs. I mean, this was one where I almost refused to believe that it was going to be technically on par with the iPad Air, because I figured that what incentive would Apple have to decrease their margins by even – why would they put all the same components in the same thing if they could save $3 and have $3 more worth of profit on a device that is not even necessarily intended to do all the work of the iPad Air? So I was assuming that this would have, like, less application RAM, or there'd be something different, but – if there's anything different between the two, we're not going to learn about it until iFixit tears it down and gets the complete parts list.
When we had the iFixit teardown, we'll do a mini teardown as well as a PlayStation 4 and Xbox One teardown. We're going to tear everything down. Milk these guys for everything they got. But when they did the iPad Air teardown a couple of weeks ago, maybe just a week ago now, Chad, it wasn't that long ago, a week last Sunday.
it was last Sunday.
It feels like ages ago.
Yeah.
The one thing they said could be different is clock speed.
Yeah.
So that's the thing to watch, I guess. Apple doesn't reveal. They don't even reveal how much RAM's in these things. But
only Anand knows for sure.
Only Anand knows for sure. So now on the site, somebody's saying on the site they don't show the M7 processor, but
it's in there.
Yeah, I think it is, because Jim says, of course, the inclusion of the M7 gives developers the opportunity to use the data collected from the integrated accelerometers, gyroscopes, and compasses. So he certainly implies it's there.
Yeah, it's atomically identical, except in size.
And possibly clock speed.
Yeah.
That's about the only. The iPad Mini, he says, can easily be your only iPad. The fact is, it always could. In fact, it was mine. I mean, I have always had other iPads, but they were at work. I always carried the Mini only. But you could do so now, he goes on, without feeling like you're giving something up in return for the size. The iPad Mini is small. It has a Retina display, and it's the most powerful iPad to date. There's just nothing bad to say about the iPad Mini. That's the three-hour review.
Again, I have to say, having used both of them and having relied on the full-size iPad, they're spec for spec, tech spec for tech spec, they're the same. But I do still insist that there is a difference between the relationship between your eyes and your hands and a 9.7 inch tablet and the relationship between a smaller tablet. If you really do think that you're going to be immersed in this device for work that lasts more than an hour or two, I really think that you will be pleased. I think most people would be happier with a full-sized iPad than with a mini. I don't think there's no difference between the two, and I don't think the only opinion I've heard expressed that I would absolutely categorically say is wrong is when people say there's no reason for a full-sized iPad anymore.
Well, I disagree on that.
Categorically wrong, right?
I think we should have a choice, though. That's all.
That. Yeah. Exactly. It's kind of. I do think that it comes down to an hour-long discussion can collapse down into two sentences, meaning that if you want a mobile device that can run desktop-class software, then you want the iPad mini. If you want a desktop-class apps in a smaller form factor, then what you want is the full-sized iPad.
And I have to say, I've been using the iPhone 5S, you know, just because I want to give it a chance, even though I'm kind of more – so funny. So yesterday or Sunday on Twit, I was the guy with a Nexus 5, and Nick Bilton has a 5S. Harper Reed has a 5S. And who else was there that had a 5S? Chad forgot
Will?
To. Will Harris. And they all had iPhone 5Ss, and they all said, your phone is too big. I said, no, it's not. It's just right. So it's really a matter of personal taste. But having used bigger phones for quite some time now, when I do go back to the 5S, I find it very hard to type. You know, I mean, it's a Retina display, so it's super crisp, super, super beautiful. But I just find it very difficult to type in passwords and stuff. Look at you.
Tiny phones.
You show
tiny
off.
Phones are tiny.
He's got an Nexus 5 and a Lumia 1020 and an iPhone 5S. And
iPhone 5 does look small. I mean, they do.
It feels small.
Me too. I mean, it's hard for me to really use it as a content device. But the thing is that Apple has their own like signature solutions to that, where it's the keyboard is smaller, but they put a lot more work into trying to guess what key that you intended to type, as opposed to making the keys bigger so that you can hit them more accurately. So in terms of typing speed, I can't say that I can type faster on my larger Nexus 5 or Galaxy S3 than I can on the smaller iPhone. What makes the other phones faster is other features they've put in. But again, it's Apple's guide is always to put as much intelligence behind the button and not put more buttons in.
Well, and so, but I guess my point is, you know, for Nick Bilton, Will Harris, and Harper Reed, this wasn't too small. For me, it was. You know, they thought my phone was too big.
It's perception.
Have what you want is the point, and I think a choice is great. And so I like the mini, you know, ironically. Yeah. I don't. The iPad is too big for me.
And isn't it great that Apple decided not to put in these artificial distinctions and say that, well, we have to maintain a marketing separation between the power machine that costs more money and the affordable one. They just said, nope, let's just put A7s in everything. Let's not BS people like that. People, there are people who want the larger. There are people who want the smaller. If you want the smaller, you can't be talked into getting the other one and vice versa. So why hoodwink people into getting less power than we can deliver?
But that is not what they did last year. Maybe because they couldn't. But it's very different from last year's strategy, where there was a distinct difference in not merely size, but power and speed between the iPad full size and the mini.
And this year it's funny. When you see people talk about it, it's like they look at the iPad mini and they say, oh, I could have everything that the iPad Air has, only smaller. Or they look at the iPad Air and say, I could have everything the iPad mini has, but just a bigger screen.
Right.
And it's almost like the glass half full, glass half empty. They have their preference. And it feels like now they're getting everything they want in their preference.
It's no compromise, but it makes it harder to choose. But at least you have the choice. But it does kind of underscore what I always felt, and apparently Dalrymple felt about the last year's mini, is that, gosh, if it only had a Retina display. And now, and I didn't even expect them to put the latest chip in there. I mean, that's gravy as far as I'm concerned. But that does this go back to the 64-bit everywhere thing that Apple wanted to do? Is that why they did that?
Who knows? I was trying to figure out if it had something to do with the Retina display itself. It's possible that there's a lot of support for it that's actually wired into the A7, and to put a lesser processor in there would result in a degraded performance. So
they've never had an X chip in an iPad mini. It went from an A5 to an A7, and the X chips are quad core GPUs. They're bigger, they're hotter, and that they're the reason why the iPad 4 wasn't thin and light like the mini.
Right.
So it's highly likely that the A7 makes all this super thin and super light and Retina and
battery
and everything else. Yep. Yeah, and battery.
Well, we don't have a teardown schedule. I'm sure iFixit is scrambling right now because We thought it would be out November 29th. You know, we're all kind of surprised that the Mini is out with Retina is out today. Because they said end of November. This is definitely not the end of November. It's not even halfway through November.
What happened? Flabbergasting. I mean, like, the last I heard was the 22nd, and then there was that Apple has this global service exchange portal where people who want to order parts or resellers go to, you know, to do their business, and it listed it as becoming available today. And I looked at it, and GSX can be wrong. I mean, someone could they could transpose digits. It could be 21 or 22 instead of 12, and it was one data point. So I was like, that's crazy. Apple will not launch it in the middle of the night without announcing it first, without doing any of this. And then the store goes down, and I was like, oh, the store is down. It must be coming. But the store goes down all the time for maintenance, and Apple listed it as being down for 4 hours of maintenance last night. It was on Apple's status page. So I'm still looking at it going, I talked to a lot of people, and everyone's like, you know, there's no, the review units haven't gone out yet. That's tomorrow. You know, Apple's probably going to want the reviews out before the units are. All these things were like, oh, this must just be an error. And then lo and behold, 3 o'clock a.m.
Is that when it was? 3 a.m. Eastern?
12 a.m. Cupertino, center of the universe time. It went
at
live
midnight
everywhere.
Midnight Cupertino. See, yeah, so, and I got, I had received the email last night from the guy at Best Buy, and I kind of wasn't sure if it was a hoax email. I figured, well, it's probably true, but it's bizarre. And I got up in the morning. What?
Yeah.
So Richard Devine at iMore has one.
Yes, he found one in England already. They're in the future.
They're in the future in England. So he has the first look.
He loves it already.
He actually took pictures before he took it home. I love that. That's dedication. This is at the Apple store. He said, I haven't even got it home yet, but here's the pictures. I would have done the same thing had I had the chance.
Absolutely.
I was refreshing the page a lot to see if I could pick it up anywhere. I was willing to drive to San Francisco to pick one up, but no one has one.
No. For pickup. Again, your local reseller or your Best Buy or someone might, and they might be willing to part with it.
Just
but it's
by
really,
chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't, I guess I could have called. I wasn't thinking. I should have called Best Buy and whipped down there. Well, I'm hoping before the show's over, somebody will drop one off. These things happen.
Not the scalpers. We want them to go.
$8,000.
Got it in gold, $8,000.
So that's all the good news. There's a lot of negative news, too. Will it be an IGZO display on the Mini? Because that's on the Air, right?
DisplayMate said yes. I asked Brian Klug at Anantech because he's an optical engineer and he's brilliant. He said he wasn't convinced yet. And until he tells me he's convinced, I'm not going to write about it. But DisplayMate seems to think it's likely just because of the power efficiency they're getting off that panel to allow for the battery life.
Indium gallium zinc oxide.
$10 word.
I like saying that. And it's pronounced IGZO. Is that right?
Yeah.
So the idea of IGZO, and by the way, Apple never says IGZO.
No.
I probably shouldn't either. But all the Sonera and others who have looked at it are pretty sure it is an IGZO display. What do you get from IGZO?
Thinness and efficiency. So it lets the problem with the iPads last year is that they required so much backlight for Retina. I forget the exact number, 48 or 36 or something like that. And this panel allows them to do much more efficiency. They have much fewer LED backlights, which again puts less strain on the battery. And the way the battery works is the higher the peaks, when you put a lot of strain, a lot of demand on it, it drains faster. So batteries aren't really getting better. We're getting better at cheating them. And part of cheating them is to keep them in a stable state for longer. So this IGZO is a much more energy efficient technology. It's not quite as efficient as what Amazon is using in the Kindles, but it's much higher yield rates right now.
What are they using in the Kindles?
I forget.
There's something even better than IGZO?
Yes, but it's harder to make. So like when you're
Amazon's using low temperature polysilicon. I think that's pronounced lip pips.
But apparently you can't make as many of those yet, and Apple has to, you know, they are in some ways victimized by the amount of iPads they have to make.
Right. IGZO, according to Sonera, what was it? It was good. Significantly better electron mobility. That's what you want.
When they start describing Retina to you in arc light minutes, Leo, you know you got to open Wikipedia and get an adult beverage.
They greased up the electrons.
It's like pornography has to slide into harder and harder core, you know, stimulation. It's like you can't now just simply like put up a page and say, here's how readable it is at which distance. Now you have to say, well, I'm getting a higher angstrom count on the reflexivity of the red. It seems like it says it's supposed to be 6680 angstroms. I'm getting 7,000, I think. Well, I sent off a couple of pixels to CERN for bombardment. When we get their results back in 3 months, then we'll finally settle this issue.
I'm still back in double twist displays. I don't know.
CRT for the win.
Yeah, I don't understand this stuff. So they've got significantly improved electron mobility, or SEBM. And that means a 57% power efficiency.
They make the electron traces out of lard now, so it's nice and slippery. you don't have any electrons getting clogged up in the filter. You don't have to change the electron filters in this device as often as you had to with the old technology.
Sonera says compared to the fourth generation, screen reflectance is decreased by 23%, peak brightness increased by 7%. This is on the air, but presumably the Retina would the Mini would have the same benefits. Contrast rating, if it has an IGZO display. Contrast rating for high ambient light increased by 32%. Absolute color accuracy and image contrast fidelity, very good. Below the fire, a little bit. IGZO is a good move. We expected IGZO. We were thinking IGZO all along.
Every year they rumor IGZO, and once eventually they'll be right.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to try. I want to say indium gallium zinc oxide. I think I've got it right now. Omnes gallium in partes tres divisa.
The Galaxy Wars.
Very good. 10 points to the man in black.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. With his CU, he's a buff. His CU shirt on. My son thanks you.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm sure whatever contribution I've made to whatever building fund that now you as the parent of a student does not have to pay for, I'm happy to.
I've learned now that he's going to be living in the Sigma Pi house starting next year, so I don't think it matters anymore. But if you want to contribute to the Toga Fund, you're more than welcome.
I'll send him a case of Ipecac, just in case.
When Henry was born, Henry's a freshman at the University of Colorado Boulder. When Henry was born, we said he was born in a toga. It's so amazing. We knew he was going to be a frat boy. It was just like he was made for it.
I'm trying to unpack exactly what that means.
Yeah, partying in his pants. When he was born,
he was covered with sickening fluids and tended to cry and scream and puke a lot, so I suppose.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, that's it, right? It's just from he, you know, I have a picture of him like 4 years old going, I mean, winking thumbs up. He was a bro from way back. All right, back to 17% glass, 70% touch sensor, improved Retina display. I'm excited. I can't wait to get my Mini. I can't wait. Of course, the reason I bought the original Mini was to play Simpsons Tapped Out. I'll have to find a new game now.
Now you can do that in Retina. Retina Tapped Out.
Retina Tapped Out. Ooh! I would if they'd fixed it. So, Electronic Arts, you owe me 1,400 donuts. I'm just saying. This brings up, now that we've gone through IGZO, Sapphire. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did we mention this last week? I think it happened after the show last week. Apple bought into a big Sapphire production company. Sapphire, I know from watch crystals, is very hard, harder even than Gorilla Glass. It has some negatives, you know. I mean, there's trade-offs, but it is a harder. And Apple does use Sapphire, apparently, to protect the button here on the home button, right? And there's Sapphire used to protect the camera sensor. But this multi-year alliance with GT Advanced Technologies, Apple has apparently paid more than $500 million to this company. That's the kind of money where you're buying up all the Sapphire production for the next 5 years, if you ask me.
And the thought is, well, could it be that they want more of these sensors and more of these cameras? Or might it be they want to use Sapphire for something else?
Bum, bum, bum.
Like a watch.
Like maybe a watch face.
Yeah. Although, it is harder than Gorilla Glass. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to, it would be a selling point. Yeah, this is the article. The TechCrunch article is pretty good.
There's a follow-up that Panzerino did as well where he explained some new process that used like an ion cannon to shear off atoms so they could make super thin ones and bond them with glass. And so they can make much more of them cheaper. The way they use an Intel display now, but they could do the same thing with Sapphire instead at a much higher yield and a much cheaper price than was possible before.
You're talking about, of course, the Hyperion ion cannon.
Yes. As all, good-hearted nerds know and love.
I want one. I don't even know what it is. I just like the name.
I want to put it on a shark.
Did you see the picture of the Hyperion ion cannon? That looks dangerous. That looks like that could be the Empire's technology.
That looks like it could heat up your burrito in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah, a lot of watches have these, but the issue is making them bigger, but also, bigger Sapphire displays. But also, I think not merely bigger, but changing some of the characteristics of Sapphire, which is not ideal. It does change the refraction, getting into your angstroms. Talking about your angstroms over there, Mr. Inako. An ion cannon allows Twin Creeks to place wafers around the edge of the device, smash them with hydrogen ions, and they accumulate 20 micrometers from the surface of each wafer. A robotic arm then transports the wafers to a furnace where the ions, here's the trick, expand in the hydrogen gas, causing that 20 micrometer thick layer to shear off.
I love this part.
Basically, you don't have to saw the sapphire. You can have a 20 micrometer thick piece of sapphire. They do it in solar panels, apparently. Right now, the cost of sapphire display, $30. MIT said that, or somebody in the MIT Technology Review said they probably thought it dropped to $20 in a couple of years. Gorilla Glass is less than $3, so it's a very expensive technology.
You can just see this in the Apple video. You can see Johnny Ive talking about the Hyperion cannon just blasting away.
Get ready. Apple did fire a patent called Sapphire Laminates, in which it discusses a variety of ways to laminate sapphire sheets together with other sapphire sheets or with glass.
And we know that one of the features of laminating a product is that you can make a curved piece of glass very easily.
Oh. Ooh.
I think that you're right. I think that if and when Apple comes out with a watch, half of it is going to go into half of the demonstration is going to go into the construction of the thing, because I think that this will Apple had their hands full with the iPhone, producing a phone that would look okay when it's inside a lint filled pocket full of keys and coins and stuff like that. But when you have like a device on your wrist that is exposed to the elements, is going to be sweated on, you get one of these he-manly arms with all these filthy little hairs on it. The American building industry. Now, I am exactly average height for an American male, and it means that if I'm wearing a watch, it is exactly the watch when I'm walking and swinging my arms is at exactly the right height to basically bash into a metal doorknob. And every watch I have has like some scratches right here from where it hit when it hit a doorknob. And I think that that's going to be one of the biggest issues Apple's going to have. If I wonder how much more difficult the process would have been if Steve were around and still able to say no, categorically no, 1,000 times no, we are not going to do a watch that looks like this after 4 months. And it's going to be such a struggle, I think.
Well, as long as we're doing materials science, this materials science portion of the show brought to you by Gazelle.com. Let's mention Global Foundries, which is a little chip fab up in upstate New York. Eric Hasseldahl at All Things D says, don't get too excited about this story. It came from the Albany Times Union saying that Apple may start using Global Foundries to churn out chips for the iPhones and iPads. Apparently, it doesn't mean Apple's abandoning Samsung. It merely is what they call flex capacity, ability to, and when needed, turn up capacity a little higher. It goes to 11 thanks to GlobalFoundries.
They have the right to abandon Samsung, but they lack the capacity.
That's right. That's right.
Or to summarize it, I just can't quit you, Samsung.
Yeah, I mean, how many? I mean, you know, I mean, good Lord, the number of devices they're cranking out.
Yeah, it's a big order.
Yeah, yeah.
Although the idea of A8 chips on an Intel 14 nanometer fab is nerd dream worthy.
Is that what GlobalFoundries does? They're 14 nanometer?
No, only Intel, but Intel started doing some ARM chips. So
right, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And that's basically capitulation. Intel, which makes the x86 chips, they can never get anybody to use in mobile devices, only desktop class devices.
It's pragmatic, Leo. It's betrayal pragmatism.
It's, yeah, right. They keep, you know, they kept trying to make mobile chips. Nobody wanted them. So what the hell? Let's make some ARM chips. We got the fabs. ARM, which was started by Apple with Acorn, way back when Apple divested a long time ago, is what they call a fabless foundry. They just design them, and then other companies like Samsung and TI and others make them. So Intel could easily just license it and make it.
And the nice thing about Apple is that they make money off the whole phone. They don't have to worry about making money off each component, which a lot of vendors do. Like a lot of Qualcomm has to make their money on the chip,
right,
and the display company. Apple doesn't care if they lose money on the chip or lose money on this, as long as they make money on the phone. So they can invest in a lot of stuff that for the A7 that, you know, Qualcomm couldn't do if they're selling it to another company.
Imagine the pressure that Apple puts on its suppliers to keep costs low. And that brings us to the depressing portion of the show. If you wish to fast forward, I wouldn't blame you. Bloomberg Businessweek article by Cam Simpson. Really, if you read it, I think you should read it. And it's not, by the way, just iPhones, not just iPads. It's every bit of electronic gadgetry from our TVs to our dishwashers to our microwave ovens to our phones to our cars. Even Ford and other car manufacturers do this. Basically, the supply chain goes back to Malaysia and countries like that, the Philippines, where they're getting workers in basically very nasty ways. And this article, which talks about in particular one worker who was recruited from Nepal and brought to Malaysia, the way the recruiters work, even though APRA's rules say the recruiters are not allowed to, the brokers, the work brokers in Nepal and other countries who bring in these workers are not allowed to charge more than a month's worth of salary. These jobs are in such hot demand in places like Kathmandu that these brokers can really extort a lot of money from these guys. So they tell the story of Flextronics, which is in Malaysia. Apple said, we need a lot of cameras for the iPhone 5. Flextronics, which makes that camera part, hires sub-recruiters going to Indonesia, Cambodia, Myanmar, Vietnam, the Himalayas. For the iPhone 5 rollout, a recruiter working for Flextronics, I'm reading from the Bloomberg Businessweek story, contacted four brokers in Kathmandu, urgently seeking 1,500 men to make cameras. According to three of the four brokers, the pressure to move so many men so quickly was unprecedented. We need these workers. You have to send them today, they said. And so they tell the story. It's such a tragic story of one of these workers who, in order to get the job, had to borrow from a loan shark in Kathmandu. Torrential rains had destroyed his home. He needed a job, and he borrowed $250. He paid $250 to a recruiter, who then connected him to a broker in Kathmandu. He ended up borrowing another $350. He had to bring $500, 6 months of his wages, to get to the airport. They take his passport. He arrives. He's working for he had $1,000 in debt before he started the job, basically. And that's a lot of money when the job pays $178 a month. 12-hour shifts. You get up at 5, you get on the bus, you arrive at 7 a.m. 12-hour shifts, and you're barely making enough money. But the worst part is, in this case, the lenses were rejected by Apple. He was a tester. In November, Dong, his name is, and the other men say they noticed the number of failures appeared to be growing. Production slowed to a drip by the end of the month. They were all laid off. And then, because they didn't have their passports, they stayed in their living quarters for 20 days. Food ran out. They can't go anywhere. It's really tragic. The guy ended up getting home eventually, but still owes a lot of money to brokers, to loan sharks that he borrowed the money from so he could get this job. So what does he have to do? He has to turn around and go back to another job where he is again could be easily a victim. He's working in a shoe factory for $3 a day. He's got $300 in annual interest. The thing that's very sad about this story is this is how this stuff is made. And, you know, you could talk, and we do talk about the factories in Shenzhen, and I think they're making improvements there. But those are just the assembly. You can even talk about the Moto X, which is assembled in Texas under humane conditions, but they still get the parts from these companies like Flextronics. It's kind of sad. There's not much Apple can do. Apple's trying to enforce these new rules, but it goes too distant, frankly, for them too. They can't control what's going on in Kathmandu. Very sad story. And you guys are just wisely shutting up.
It's horrific.
Did you read it? Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? I mean, these are events that you just...
It's close to slave labor as you get, because these guys have no choice, right?
It seems vulgar to comment on them because the reprehensible nature of how some people will exploit other people speaks for itself. You can't you can't embroider that with anything.
So it's not, and I want to be very clear, not blaming Apple at all.
Of course not.
This is, and it's, in some ways it's us because we buy this stuff. I guess all you can do is buy less of it, keep it longer.
There's enough blame to go around, and yeah. Apple gets its fair share of benefits from being one of the world's biggest companies. And one of the drawbacks is that when there's something like this happens, they get the equal and opposite attention for this situation. So it's entirely fair.
Yeah, and there's nowhere else to go. I mean, you can assemble as Motorola is doing in the U.S., as Ford does in many cases, but you still have to buy these parts.
The Mac Pro will be done that.
You still have to buy these parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
You hope as a species we'll mature to the point where it no longer happens globally rather than just locally.
Yeah, and it can't hide your head in the sand about it, and we just have to keep raising the issue and try to do better.
I mean, not to get cynical, but I mean, it's like there's almost no point, no part of any story that involves really good technology that doesn't involve human suffering or doesn't inspire somebody to express the baser nature of occasional human existence.
Yeah.
Just like when there's a great story, it's a great success story when a school district that's full of kids that don't have as many advantages as the rest get a grant money, get appropriations so that every kid can have an iPad. And only how many days does it take before the local criminal element decides, oh, great, so a bunch of 8, 9, 10-year-old kids are going to be carrying around $500 easily resellable devices. So let's just make sure we have a system. We don't try to mug the same kids twice. We're going to systematically make sure that none of these kids go home with those iPads. And it's like it's terrible that when you think about how wonderful beneficial this technology can be, if only people would get out of the way of the good thoughts and the good intentions. And it's terrible that every time you think about as lovely as an iPhone 5S or as innovative as the Moto X or anything that you really, really like, you know that you don't have to dig too far down before you find human suffering. So
don't
tear out your tear out your heart about this. Take action where you feel it's appropriate, but I think it's enough to make sure that you never simply forget that such things are happening.
Yeah, and that's why I bring it up. It's a downer.
It made me very, very sad to hear that story.
It's so sad. And read the story, please, just so you know. And I just don't know what there is really no obvious solution except just to let's do better, kids.
Inform people, Leo, like you just did.
Yeah. Well, and all credit to Bloomberg Businessweek, which wrote, which must be, especially for a business journal, a difficult story for them to report on. It's sad. We're going to take a break. When we come back, happier news. Not really. I work. Pfft, what happened? now even Jean-Louis Gasset is just, and, you know, we'll talk.
Mais non!
Mais non! Sacré bleu! Zut alors! We'll talk about other happier things. And why Google has not won in the map war. But first, let's say there's one thing you can do if you have a gadget is not just throw it in a drawer or throw it in the landfill, heaven forfend, but recycle it the right way with Gazelle. Sell it to somebody who wants that gadget. That's one less gadget being made, one less gadget in the landfill, and it's some bucks in your pocket. Gazelle.com. If you're all hot and bothered, you have the old iPad mini with Retina display. By the way, they not only buy Apple tablets, but Amazon, Asus, Google. They'll buy Surfaces from Microsoft, Samsung tablets. But let's say you have a iPad mini and you're going, I want to get that nice $255 on a good condition 64 gig iPad mini with LTE. That's a great deal. This is what Gazelle does so well. They buy this stuff. They sell it on eBay. They have a special Gazelle store on eBay, which is great, by the way, if you want to buy a lightly used, well taken care of device. You can sell your stuff on Gazelle, get cash in your pocket for your next device, and make sure somebody's using that old device appropriately. Even iPods, Apple TVs, Apple displays, MacBooks, iMacs. They even buy BlackBerry cell phones, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung. Visit Gazelle.com, Gazelle. The way this works, you know, you're not going to get your mini, even if you order it today, you're not going to get your mini for a couple of weeks, right? So the way this works is you get a quote for 30 days. Get that quote now. I guarantee you the price goes down on every one of these things as they get older, right? So get the quote now. You're locked in for 30 days. It doesn't mean you have to send it to them immediately. You have 30 days to decide whether you're going to take advantage of the offer. They will send you a prepaid mailer, so you don't have to pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And once you've And by the way, don't just send them one thing. Get rid of everything in that drawer. I just did that. I have a box. I should show you my box. It's in the trunk of my car. Of all this stuff, because I moved, I have a Gazelle box. It's maybe 100 pounds of stuff I'm going to send to Gazelle. I'm so excited. You could do the same thing. You can get a check, of course, PayPal, if you want it right away. My suggestion, if you do buy stuff on Amazon, this would be a great way to do it. Get an Amazon gift card. They add 5% to the value automatically. Their data experts will take a look at your device, check the quality, you know, how good a shape it's in and all that. In fact, sometimes they even bump the offer up if it's in better shape than you thought it was. They'll also wipe your data if you forget to do that. I tell you, this is Gazelle has sent out $100 million to over 700,000 customers over the last few years. You should get in on this. It is a gold rush. Gazelle.com. Thank you for their support of MacBreak Weekly. And this is one thing you can do. I didn't mean to tie it into that story, but this is one thing you can do, is make sure that, you know, that old device at least gets, you know, purchased and lasts a little bit longer. So, I don't use iWork to the point where I'm really upset with it, but I guess if you did, you would be upset. Jean-Louis Gasset running in his Monday note, which I love. I read this every Monday. He's a former Apple international president, right? Or senior vice president. He said Apple's iWork is another missed opportunity to set expectations. It's more than just iWork. He talks about selling his old Chevy Tahoe and how impressed he was with his daughter, who went to the dealer, the used car dealer, and told him all the bad stuff first. She says, the car has dents in the rear fender, glove compartment door is a little stubborn, the cup holder is missing a flange. However, look at the impeccable engine, the spotless interior, the good as new finish. The dealer was charmed and complimentary. He says, this is the opposite of the usual posturing he gets. He says, the typical seller touts the low mileage, the documented maintenance, and then tries to hide the old tires and the nicked rims and the white smoke that comes out of the tailpipe. The salesman said, this is how you do it. Give the bad news first. Don't let the buyer discover it. Puts you on the defensive. He says, this guy should talk to Apple's executives. They've done it again. They bragged about their refurbished iWork suite only to let customers discover the actual product fails to meet expectations. Fair, Renee?
Sorry, the reserve for pickup just went live, so I was turning that in while you were talking.
Can you go into a Montreal Apparel store and get it?
Yes.
Now?
Between 3 and 4 o'clock and 4 and 5 o'clock. So I'll go right after the show.
Awesome.
It is fair and unfair at the same time. It depends on whose point of view. It is short-term unfair, long-term beneficial. Apple is not afraid of hurting short-term interests to serve long-term interests.
No, but he's not saying that. He understands that. And we've talked about this before. It was a complete rewrite from ground up, just as Final Cut was, just as iMovie was, and features are taken out. But he says Apple's executives should not take the stage, as Eddie Q does, and say, quote, this is the biggest day for apps in Apple's history. These news versions deliver seamless experience you can't find anywhere else and are packed with great features. You shouldn't say that. You should say, look, we had to take some stuff out. I understand that.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, they didn't do that with Maps, much to their... I mean, they're still hurting because they didn't do that with Maps. They didn't set expectations at all. With Siri, they were a little bit better because they put the beta tag on it.
They did do that. You're right.
Yeah. Nowhere nearly enough. I mean, they should have really explained... Apple has this... People attribute to Apple this ability to under-promise and over-deliver. So when they do the exact opposite of that, it is even more apparent, more egregious, and more frustrating for users. And yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. If they'd gone out there and said, look, we're rewriting iWork from the ground up. We're making it compatible across these devices. But because we've been so busy doing that, all the features you know and love aren't there yet. But we're going to work really hard to give them back to you as soon as possible. I think a lot of people would understand that and would extend them, you know, a lot more time and goodwill than they get otherwise.
That's exactly what Gasset says. He says, why brag instead of calmly making a case, as you just did very well, by the way, Renee, for the long game and telling loyal customers about the dents that inevitably discover. He also makes another good point, which is that you've got this Microsoft Office 365, which is working beautifully. And that's a challenge for Apple. Now, Microsoft's kind of giving Apple some breathing room by not making Office available on the iPad. Could be a bad strategy on Microsoft's part.
Stephen Eloff will fix that.
Maybe. Yeah, Stephen will just sell it all off.
I do think they missed an opportunity here. I don't blame them for when they're on the big stage with 600 members of the media out there to accentuate the positive. And they stated the overall goal of building a version of iWork that is seamless across all devices, including the web. However, after the lights are down, after people have filed out, they are still going to be talking to lots and lots of different people. So that's an opportunity for a senior executive to say, here is our larger, as Renee was saying, here is our larger long-term strategy. Yes. And here are things that we are giving up in the short run that we believe we're going to catch up in the future. The thing is, though, that you do have to, the presentation is so important. The first time that I didn't use Keynote for like 3 or 4 days after the new version was available. And in that time, I was reading tech notes. I was reading discussions. I was talking to other people who had used it. And I was prepared for a really, really crappy experience. And I was quite surprised to find that it was actually quite capable, that there's very little that I do with Keynote that I couldn't actually make this app work. So if I had seen this is their big... You know, this is their big media event. They're taking 4 minutes out of this to tell me how crappy this new app was.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not sure if I would have upgraded to it. I'm not sure if I would have even risked it. And I think that once I started using it, I would not have been open to the possibility that perhaps a unified window is actually a very, very clean and an attractive interface. Right. I would have been focused on, oh, yeah, but if I do a magic move that involves more than 8 QuickTime objects on the same panel, look at how slow that tracks in. You know, the old version worked so much better than this.
Oh, it's worse stuff than that, though.
I mean, that's
the problem is basic functionality also doesn't work.
Well, they could pick their battles. I mean, they could have announced collaboration and not done all the rest, and then people, at least, they wouldn't have been promised something that wasn't delivered, because collaboration was good enough on its own to be a nice demo for them.
Yeah, and it might have been interesting if they simply had created two separate apps, so to speak, where they had kept the old code base as still a set of $15 per download iWork apps. But then if you want to, free apps, you download these brand new versions. They're not on the same upgrade path as your old apps. That would have really made a distinction between these two classes of apps. where people still expect the same features and the same functionality out of the stuff that they paid $15 a head for, but the stuff that they were getting for free, they could at least have that lowered expectation that this is a new start, this is a new beginning, I'm going to get whatever I get from it. And then ideally a year and a half from now, when those free apps had all the same functionality of the paid apps, then you suddenly find people not wanting to buy the new versions, and it would have been a seamless transition.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing happened exactly with iMovie. Same thing happened exactly with Final Cut. Now, to Apple's credit, go ahead.
I was saying the other problem is that we are looking at a consistent trend that is, for me, very, very hard to deny, that Apple really is scaling down their expectations of what their software and what their hardware can do. The hardware is top notch. The performance of the operating system and the CPUs that drive them are also top notch, but they're using that speed and that agility to make things simpler and easier and more approachable. They're not doing it to give you a handheld device that can do a myriad of wonderful things. I think that they've sort of lowered the ceiling for macOS and they've sort of lowered the ceiling for iOS. So that if you can comfortably operate within that lowered ceiling, all you notice is that things are faster, things are slicker, things work between experiences more easily. But once you get to the point where, look, I've got this project and, man, I don't know why I have to split this document into several separate projects instead of keeping it as one big 300-page report. Because the old versions, when I was using this same app 2 years ago, I could do that. But now the new version doesn't let me do that. That's when you're going to start losing people to Windows. That's when you're going to start losing people to Android. It disappoints me that it's no longer. One of the best aspirational slogans that Apple ever had was the power to be your best. That's not something that's really applicable anymore. That's not a censure of Apple. It just means that they are no longer promising you that these are wheels for the mind. No matter what you want to do with this device, we will support you and help you do that. Right now, we are going to make sure that you have the least amount of stress and getting the things done that you expect to get done that you can possibly have. It's a different goal. I don't know how they could articulate that without making people think that, hi, we're making stupid Fisher Price, you know, leapfrog style tablets and computers, which is absolutely not what they're doing. But it's hard to make that careful message that we are helping people get more access to a wider range of features with less trouble and more reliability without making people think that. And yet, if you want to get to the top 5 or the top 10% of the potential of a computer with these specs, we're going to find it increasingly harder as you get from 91% to 93% to 95% to 96%.
Well, to Apple's credit, I guess, or maybe they're just starting to feel the heat, they did put up a page in the last couple of days. It talks about what's missing. And they said some features in the upcoming releases in the next 6 months, customized toolbar, vertical ruler, improved alignment guides, improved object placement, improved importment of cells with images, improved word counts. How can you mess up word count? We miss a few. Right now we miss a few.
We counted A and we shouldn't have. We're sorry.
That's one of the first things you write when you're learning how to program is word count. Keyboard shortcuts for styles. Manage pages and sections from the thumb. Anyway, I can go on and on. It's a long list, but And then their answer to this is you can continue to use these features by accessing the previous versions of iWork. They do point out those are still installed.
Yeah.
So they didn't get rid of them. But Jean-Louis Gasset's list of things that are wrong is a little bit more than just a few missing features. It's pretty scathing, frankly.
Well, again, I think it was a very deliberate move. Where they're saying this is a leap that we think we need to make, and if we have to make things kind of uncomfortable for the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to do that.
They definitely could have made
a better example of that.
And look at Mavericks, all the bugs with Mavericks. They released a new Gmail.
Renee has something very, very smart to say, I'm sure. I'll get out of the way after just saying that. I don't think that it's reasonable for us to expect that when you have a major new release, as major as iOS 7 was, as major as Mavericks was, that there isn't going to be a transitional period of suck that we're going to have to slog our way through.
Yeah.
And I think that we have, as users, we have a greater responsibility to be aware of what's going to happen to our devices when we apply this major, major upgrade. Right in front of me, I have my I have my day-to-day use MacBook Pro. That is not on Mavericks yet. In the other room charging, I have my day-to-day use iPad. That is not on iOS 7 yet. That's because neither of these things is stable enough to my liking for a device that I rely on day in, day out to run my entire business on. That doesn't describe everybody, but and I know that, you know, I tend to keep my ear to the ground a lot more than consumers do, given that Apple makes it so easy to simply click this one button and upgrade. But I think that's going to be part of the new responsibility of being a computer owner, knowing that do not automatically install a major update until you know exactly what this is going to entail.
Seems worse than it has been before, but maybe that's just me. Or maybe it's what I use that's more.
It's the thing that there's this phenomenon. I experience it too, where you sort of look at the past with rose-colored glasses or you forget the pain that happened in the past. But I have had really, really bad experiences with upgrades. iOS 2, iOS 3. I forget if it was Lion or it was Snow Leopard before that. I'm like Andy. The machine I'm using right now is still on Mountain Lion. I waited to put it on, I think, 6 months to even put it on Mountain Lion. And I'm going to wait 6 months to put it on Mavericks because I use it for production work. But my main MacBook is on Mavericks already, and I'm getting 2 hours more battery life than I got it before. And I made an informed adult choice to put it on, knowing that there would be some bugs, but wanting the benefits that came with it. And the way they're going into yearly release cycles and the size, the sheer amount of code they're dealing with, and, you know, given Apple's organization, there's going to be things. I luckily have not had any major problems. I do have the audio issue, which I know how to fix, you know, through a reboot of all things, but it works. So it's just a matter of, you know, the pain right now is fresh, so it seems really, really bad, and I hope Apple fixes it last week. But I do write down, you know, I go back and look at my old articles about the pain I experienced last year and the year before, and I'm quite certain I was just as angry back then as I am now.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, Apple.
Apple says our business does not depend on collecting personal data. Unlike, I don't know, some other companies you might think of. We have no interest in amassing personal information about our customers. We protect personal conversations by providing end-to-end encryption over iMessage and FaceTime. I wish they wouldn't harp on that since we know it's still not exactly the case. We do not store location data, map searches, or Siri requests in any identifiable form. Now, what's interesting is they have now done a transparency report. And this transparency report, which is quite interesting, has what some are calling a canary in it. They say we have never been given a, what is it, the Section 203 letter. One of those national security letters. We've never received one. So they say we've never received a warrant. But by saying we've never received a warrant, they call this a warrant canary. If that transparency report continues to come out and at some point that sentence is missing, mm-hmm. it is a legal way of saying, hey, we got one. I like it. Clever.
It's like dark matter.
Clever. It's the absence of the warranty canary that is... telling you something.
I'm sorry. I think that if I were a member of the government who had responsibility for this sort of thing, I would be PO'd enough about this to say, all right, guess what?
You're getting a warrant.
I'd be like the one guy who has to do the one-star review of Finding Nemo just because the five-star review, just the 100% Rotten Tomatoes rating screws me over.
I love it.
We're going to see more of this stuff. I have not talked to anybody at Google, Facebook, or I've not really spoken to anybody at Apple about this, but at high levels who is not absolutely ticked off about what they're being expected to do and not finding countermeasures to do almost exactly what Apple is saying. So they know exactly what they're legally required to do, but they also know that if we can say, well, we have no data to turn over, and yes, you asked us to collect this data, however you did not file your request and such, they're looking for ways to be able to say, look, we are, unless you've been caught with plutonium in your jockey shorts during a TSA pat down, we're going to find a way not to hand over your information to somebody who does not have access to it.
Here's the line. It's the last line in the Apple report. Apple has never received an order under Section 215 of the Patriot Act,
We would expect to challenge such an order if served on us. But as some many have pointed out, other companies did this. In fact, rSync is the first company to have done it. Lookout Security has also done it. The point being that if you ever saw that line disappeared, then you could presume they have received a Section 215 order. Not that that's such a big revelation. I mean, yeah. The fact that Google and Facebook have not made this statement probably is as strong an indication that they have received an order. But so
it's
what?
Just, it's sad well, that it comes well, to this. I mean, it's one of
isn't
those.
Isn't that pathetic?
It's one of my favorite lines from, you know, again, I'm going to quote the West Wing, in a country founded on freedom, what could be more important than privacy? And that was in 1999. And now, you know, it's absolutely become manifest that we just, it's beyond appalling.
Yeah. I think we can take a break and come up with our picks of the week. Unless you guys have a story that we haven't covered you really would like to talk about, I'm going to leave all the lawsuits out. I find them boring and unproductive.
Well, if we want to be like live cable news, we can say that there. I'm getting multiple messages from people claiming that the CPU performance of the iPad Mini is closer to the 5S than the iPad Air. That there is a measurable distance. However, I've been trying to find the actual tests that people are performing, and I'm not seeing them yet.
The iPhone is 1.3, and the Air is 1.4. So that would mean the Mini is 1.3. I won't notice that difference in everyday use.
And also we're talking about how fast how many CPU cycles happen between cursor flashes while it's waiting for you to type the next thing with a keyboard.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd
notice.
That's
what people are usually talking about when they're talking about CPU.
Right. I don't know if you'd notice. This is coming from Mac Rumors, which has apparently acquired a Mini and run benchmarks, and they say that it doesn't. This is I suspect what iFixit was talking about. It's probably not running at the same clock speed.
Yeah,
that might just be a thermal issue.
Right.
Yeah, it's more important that it's running the A7. If it were running a lesser processor at the same speed as this A7, that wouldn't be as good as having a slower, an underclocked A7 or a slower A7.
It's not a huge difference, according to Geekbench 3. The Retina is running at 1.3 gigahertz, which is what the iPhone 5S runs at. The Air is 1.4 gigahertz. Not a big difference.
No, it's not a human discernible difference.
Probably not. Why would they do that? Better battery life?
Heat.
Heat.
Yeah.
Well,
this
yes.
This is the nature of this device. There are problems that I will notice on a smaller version of the same tablet on an Android that I will not notice particularly on the larger one, simply by virtue of the fact that my hands are covering the entire thing. and so literally, there is no place for a heat bloom to hide.
Right.
And also, there's presumably less opportunities to radiate heat out elsewhere,
right.
Given how tightly packed things are going to have to be in a smaller tablet.
So. And that's what they call it, a heat bloom?
I'm saying heat bloom because...
I like that. I hope you coined that and trademarked it.
I think it's from aerial reconnaissance when they're looking
right.
Seriously, when they were looking at infrared photography and video. Oh, there's a heat bloom from that shed over there, so therefore there are people who are in operation in there. But yes, I'm thinking of Orlando Bloom. All right, the guy is heavenly.
He's gorgeous.
He's still on my mind.
He's gorgeous. Let's take a break. When we come back, our picks of the week: Andy Yannacco from the Chicago Sun Times, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Renee, did you get that pickup set up?
I do. I'm trying to make sure I get one at 4-5 or 5-4. It's like the end of a baseball game here, Leo. It's so exciting.
All right. You want us to watch that live, or should we take a break while you focus?
No. Go ahead.
If we had a picture of his screen, we would display it, but we don't. So, Chad, can we go right now and pick one up? Really? That's 128 gigger. Should I send somebody down to get one?
Well, the question is what version did you get? Did you get the Wi-Fi cellular? Because
Wi-Fi 32.
And then on which carrier?
No, Wi-Fi 32.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood. Those are available today.
Well,
we could just send someone down and pick you up one.
Should I cancel my order?
I can reserve this right now, and
would
then
you?
Yeah, and then I'd say.
Wait a minute! No, let's get a 64. I only did that because I had
to. Okay. Well, you could get the 128.
No, I don't want 128. That's just crazy.
But definitely Wi-Fi only?
Yeah, 9495.
That movie where someone is trying to tell somebody how to defuse a bomb via telephone.
No,
it's available.
All right.
Select the store.
Should I give you my... Lisa, what should we do? I already ordered a 32. I guess I could cancel the 32.
Yeah, see if you can still cancel it.
You'll take the 32 for a Christmas present?
Skip the engraving.
No engraving, because that, of course, would slow it down. I would like the smart case. Well, am I a sucker to buy that or no?
In blue, probably. I'm kidding.
Yeah, we have to send some. We'll get an appointment in a moment. Just like Renee. Okay. Although his will be in Montreal. That would be the big difference. Yeah. His will be in French.
Which color smart case would you like?
Can I have product red?
Yes. I'm a fan.
I'd like to do my bit. And besides, red's a cute color.
Oh, no, thanks you.
Okay.
Oh, no, thanks me. He sunk all his money into Palms, so he needs the money.
I say select store.
Select store, Santa Rosa. Yeah, yeah.
Add to cart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now you probably need a credit card. What? $668? Because we can get it today. If we can get it today, we can do it before we buy it. Well, go ahead.
For some reason, it seems like it's still says shipping pickup options.
No, you have to continue, right, okay, yeah. Renee? If you continue on, now you should probably hide that screen as you enter my Apple password.
Yeah, maybe you should do this. Do you want me to take the ad?
Lisa can do it. That's the point, is it? Well, go through it, and I think that at the end of the order process, you could say pick up.
Right.
I don't know. Who can drive? No, you can have somebody pick it up for you.
I thought that Sarah couldn't get her iPad because it actually got to show a driver's license that said her information.
No. It says have somebody pick it up for you. I don't care. Well, you know what? Let's finish the ad. Let's finish the show. I'll go do it. I got an hour. Our show today. But you can't do that, Leo. You can't buy one today. I really think if we should pick it up.
Do it, Leo.
Go for it. You're getting yours, Renee, right?
Yep.
The Montreal Apple Store?
Fairview Point Claire. Canada, like we had two football teams named the Rough Riders, we have two stores named Fairview. It's very confusing.
I do have an Apple business account. We should use that, don't we? Yep. And then you get a percent off or something silly.
2% or 3%.
Some ridiculously low. Our show today brought to you, let me tell you something, I'm saving a lot of money on Squarespace.com so I can afford to get an iPad mini with Retina display. Squarespace.com is the greatest place to create your own website. Now that we're getting close to the fourth quarter, the holiday buying season, perhaps you would like to have an e-commerce site. Maybe you make little cat doilies for your cat to rest upon. And you'd like to sell your cat doilies online. There is no easier way to set up a site for e-commerce than Squarespace.com. You could have it running today. First, go to Squarespace.com. Without giving them a credit card or any information except your email address, you can set up a page for 2 weeks, have the whole place, the run of the place, designed. You'll choose from 20 gorgeous templates, customize it to make it the way you want it. They've won design awards from everybody, including the Webbies, Forbes, FWA. It's easy to use, but if you do want help, they've got 24/7 support. They've got webinars. They won a Golden Stevie for their support. I mean, it really is great. And then this is the thing that blows me away. So 2 weeks, you can try it, costs you nothing. But look at the pricing if you decide, hey, I want to keep this store up for the holidays. $24 a month when you buy an annual plan. You get fully integrated e-commerce. They don't charge you transaction fees. Unlimited physical, digital, and service products. Unlimited pages, unlimited storage, unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill. If you're selling the Furbies, the hottest, the Furby for 2014, whatever that is, kitty doilies, hot stuff, don't worry. They help you track inventory. They help you calculate taxes and shipping. You even have coupon controls, unlimited. You can do all you want. If you are a developer, the developer platform makes it great, but that's always included. When you register a year, you get the custom domain name free, kittydoilies.net, still available. Or kittydoiliesr.us. Hey, there's a name. I'll let you have that one for free. So will Squarespace. Then they'll hook it all up for you. Get started today, squarespace.com. It's absolutely free. But when you do buy, make sure you use our offer code MACBREAK11, and we'll save you even more, 10% off your new account. Squarespace, great way to get a website up and running. And if you want to do e-commerce, there is no better way. This is an amazing deal. But also, if you want to blog, if you've got a portfolio, they start as low as $8 a month with an annual plan. Squarespace.com. Time for our picks of the week. Renee, are you done ordering or do you want me to
go? I've reserved for pickup.
And what time? 4 or 5?
Between 2 and 4.
Whoa! That means you can get there at 2:01, right?
Well, it's Eastern time. So.
Oh, they text you, though, don't they? They'll text you.
Oh, it's already 3:30. Today's the day it launched in Canada. We've never had pickups reserved for pickup before. So
I think they send you a text and say, your mini with Retina is waiting. You have 33 seconds to get in here.
Theoretically, I have 30 more minutes to get there. Theoretically.
Well, quick, give us your pick, and then we'll get out of here.
So my pick is incredibly self-serving this week, but we just relaunched the iMore app. So this is the iMore app version 3.0. Like iWork, we rebuilt it from the ground up. Like iWork, we no longer have all the features we used to have, but we have a lot of really cool new ones. So it's an iOS 7 app. It uses all the iOS 7 frameworks. It's got the swipe to go to the sidebar. It's got the navigation between stories. It's got integration with reading lists. You can do commenting with iOS 7 style avatars right in the app. So if I want to leave a comment on here, I can just go into any, I'll show you up here so people can actually see it. If I want to go into the story, I can just, it's in reverse. I apologize. I can swipe between the main stories here. Other way. There we go. So I can swipe between the stories. I can go into a story. I can leave a comment on the story and see everyone else who's commented on the story. And I can even swipe in between stories if I really want to. And I have the eye-hand coordination to do it. But it's in the App Store now. It is still free. It's got all of our articles, all of our podcasts, everything that we can do. We're still working on it. We'll have an iPad version soon, but it just launched in the App Store yesterday. And we're really, really happy with it. So please check it out.
Awesome. Very nice. Andy Iannacco, your pick of the week.
I got a lot. When I posted that photo of my mobile news broad podcasting, video casting studio, $2,000 Dopplers setup from that airport lounge when I was podcasting from last week, a lot of people asked me about this light that I was using to have mobile illumination. So I thought I'd make that my pick of the week. This is the Micro Pro from Light Panels. It is a really super, super good light. It's all LED. It will run off of a variety of AC voltages, but it will also run damn near forever on a set of six AA batteries. So it is. It also has a couple of nice little attachments to it. It comes with this little stand so that you can either put it right inside the hot shoe of your SLR or camera so you can use it as a video light for your camera. Or it also has a tripod mount, which is what I was using last week. So just put it on a little tabletop stand or a floor stand. And as you can kind of see, it really puts off a good amount of light with fresh batteries. I mean, this is actually quite painful to look into, so I'm not going to look into that. But it's also adjustable with this knob here. So you can hit exactly the amount of light that you want. So this is a smaller version of the professional LED light panels that you see a lot of studios using. And it's also, there's another reason why I have this picture behind me, because this is one of the superstar utility players in my gadget bag, I'm really happy with this. I knew that I was going to be getting a chance to see this, the space shuttle while I was in LA last week. I definitely wanted to get a picture of the cows in front of it. And as I often do, I tossed this in my bag, because this gave me, put right in front of the cows like this, gave me the exact right amount of fill lighting that I needed to separate the cows from the background. So whenever I'm traveling, sometimes I'll have a briefing where I'm not going to be sent home with hardware, but I'm allowed to play with the hardware and photograph the hardware. This always goes inside my bag because it's much easier. I get the shot much more quickly, and I'm much better shot if I'm using this as opposed to a flash, because I can simply aim it exactly where I want that light to go. And then I can also say, oh, no, that's too bright. I want that a little bit. All I want to do is I want to highlight the edge of that so it separates from the table a little bit. And so I can get great, great pictures just using this as a little DIY illuminator. It's not cheap. It's a $300 light. But if you need mobile light, whether you're shooting video or whether you're doing photography where you need that sort of little, humble, little fill light, you will find that this is a solution to so many problems. It really does earn its weight.
I love it. Yeah. And look at this shot. I mean, it really makes a difference because you get that fill.
Yeah. I mean, I could point to you. You look at the shots I took of the Kindle Fire HDX where, again, it's not like they're setting up a studio for me in that office. It's just on a coffee table. And if I spend more than a few minutes taking pictures, it's probably not going to be very polite. But I get so many, not I hesitate to say studio quality, but much, much better than what you would get with just trying to take a picture with the on-camera flash or whatever time you have. And also, I should mention that I'm not sure if you necessarily carry this with you while you're traveling as a as an illuminator for your cell phone, but that is actually shot with a cell phone. And you would never, ever be able to get like flash sync to work on a phone like that. But if this is just, it's just on all the time and always giving you light. And so that always, that gives you a way to create the kind of picture where people will be surprised to learn that it was actually taken with a cell phone. I did a, last note, because I'm very pleased with this gadget. I also took a picture of the underside. As you're walking around and you've got your camera and you're sort of looking for interesting photos. And I noticed that the wing flaps and the back of the space shuttle, like there's like a gap between them that you can see the parts of the American flag that's hanging on the back of the hangar. So I really want to get a shot of the underside where you can see the heat resistant tiles and just enough of the flag. And it wasn't coming out well because it was just a cell phone camera. Then I realized that, oh wait, I've got this powerful illuminator too. So I was actually holding this illuminator like this up. So it was actually illuminating those black tiles while I was getting the regular exposure from the flag in the back. So as I said, it's a great thing to have in your bag where you will at one point, you'll be at a point where in a lot of different places where you'll realize that, oh, well, I guess I have no solution to that problem. Then you realize that, wait a minute, I've got ultra bright steady LED light that's adjustable in my bag. I have a solution to this problem. And that it saved my neck so many times.
We love light panels. They were our original lighting provider. We have lots of light panels in our studio. And I have a few of those. As well, really good stuff, and they last forever. I mean, they really.
Yeah, I mean, I did not put fresh batteries in here before I left, and I was like, oh, I bet the batteries are dead, but nope, yeah. I can't remember the last time I changed the batteries, and yet it's still, again, point of pain brightness.
I was going to demonstrate the Knock app because it's been getting a lot of attention. Except that unfortunately, there's a little flaw in the setup. Sarah now has to knock to turn on my. So the Knock app is kind of a very, it's a really cool idea. You put the app, which is $4 on your iPhone, and you put the desktop app on your late model, by the way, it has to be a late model Macintosh. And then what happens, and I just rebooted, so maybe I can get it to work now, because what it does, it uses the low energy Bluetooth, so that's why it has to be a late model Mac. It has to support Bluetooth LE. to unlock your Macintosh by you get within range of your Mac, locked Mac, and you knock on your phone twice and the Mac goes, hello. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a way to say which Bluetooth low energy device. And for some reason, it's unlocking itself by attaching to you, Sarah. So I'm going to try to set it up again. It says lock your phone. We'll take care of setup on your Mac. Okay, my phone is locked. Okay. They have some work to do. It's a great idea. I got it working at home. So when I get home, I have to have the iPhone within Bluetooth range of my Mac. And then I knock on it twice and it wakes up. But unfortunately, for some reason, it didn't see the iPhone sitting right next to it running the Knock app. Apparently, Sarah has it on her iPhone. And so now Sarah can basically unlock my Mac anytime she wants by knocking.
It's enough to make me want Apple to do it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to stop recommending this application. Worked great when I tried it at home, but setting it up here today was kind of a less of a.
So we're seeing the opposite of the Colbert bump. It's the Laporte.
So, if you're looking for it on the App Store, it's kind of hard to find because there's lots of other apps with the word knock. It's knock, unlock your Mac. There it is. Without typing a thing, your phone is the password. That's the name of the program by Knock Software Incorporated. And then do the same thing on searching for the website because you need to download the app from a website for that. Just Knock Software Incorporated will do it. Because if you just search for knock and app, you'll get all the articles about the knock app. Not to knock the Knock app.
Why have I not been approached as the spokesperson for this?
Inaco. Inaco. That's what they should have called it. Inaco. Then you could have found it. Andy Inaco. You can find him at the Chicago Sun-Times. That's where he writes. What are you working on today for the Times?
Wrapping up my review of the iPad Air, which I took for its first field excursion last week. And after that, a longer think piece about the nature of the iPad, which has been
for about a week. Yeah, we could see some of that coming out of you today.
Exciting time to be an iPad legend.
Yeah. It's great to have you as always, Annie. Renee Ritchie's at iMore.com. Get the new iMore app. You will be in touch with Renee always. You will be living with you.
Remember, Canadian listeners, you have but another 23 minutes to get your Renee costume together and get to that store before Renee does.
I'm totally torturing Renee by slow playing this. You understand that, right? So, Renee Ritchie, nice guy. Go ahead. Just go get your Mac. Go get your iPad. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time at 1900 UTC at twit.tv. Watch live if you can, because we love having you in the chat room and so forth. But if you can't, hey, it's okay. We got on-demand audio and video available at after the effect. twit.tv/MBW. You can also go to our Twit site for a couple of other reasons. We have a survey we're looking to get your response to. Helps us sell ads on Twit, helps us understand you better. twit.tv/survey. And we're getting our best ofs together for the end of the year, as we do every year. And if you've got a memory from one of the previous MacBreak or this one, any MacBreak weekly, you thought, gosh, that should really be in the best of, go to twit.tv/best of. And don't worry about, we ask for all, time code and stuff. If you don't know the time code, that's okay. Just your best idea of when you saw that would be great. If you want to be in studio with us, hey, that's easy. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We always have a nice little studio audience for this show and most of our shows, and we love doing that too. It's nice to have you guys here. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Now get back to work, because MacBreak is over.